Welcome to the AFP Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Thursday, January 5th, 2023. This is the 31st edition of the AFP Report, a podcast series where I will be interviewing reporters and contributors to American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, as well as other special guests. Please consider subscribing to American Free Press if you are not already. Subscription details can be found at AmericanFreePress.net. And today I'm joined by Donald Jeffries, a regular reporter for the newspaper and the author of numerous books dealing with hidden history and conspiracies. All right, Don Jeffries, welcome back to the program, sir. Merry belated Christmas and a very happy new year to you, your family, and of course, all of our listeners and subscribers to American Free Press. How are you today, sir?
Fine, thanks. Merry Christmas and happy new year to you and to everyone listening as well.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been far too long since we last spoke. I think it was back in like August or maybe September.
So
this podcast is long overdue. It's always great to have you. You are, of course, a regular reporter for American Free Press. You have been for a number of years now. And, of course, you host some of your own radio programs or live stream programs. You've also authored at least 4 books, if I'm not mistaken. You could probably correct me.
Six books.
Okay. Sorry. No, didn't mean to.
We've got 3 more coming up too, in some order, very soon. So.
Very good. Yeah. Excellent. And you know, you focus on hidden histories and conspiracies and related topics, and of course, you write about these subjects as well for American Free Press. And of course, as we enter 2023, there is major political drama, an ongoing feature of American politics. We literally just wrapped up issue 1 and 2 of the new year of 2023, obviously the first issue of the newspaper in this current year. And the front page story actually deals with the political stalemate in the House of Representatives, where a group of more or less renegade GOP congressmen have thus far stymied the political prospects of aspiring House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Apparently, as we started this interview, McCarthy has just failed for the 8th time in his attempt to become Speaker of the House. So these 18, 19, 20 renegade GOP representatives are not backing down, it seems like. And of course, they seem to be led by Florida Representative Matt Gaetz, Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert, and Texas Rep. Chip Roy, among others. Thus far, they've been successful in squashing McCarthy's bid. So, of course, we see political turmoil within the Republican Party, which I frankly don't see as a bad thing. I mean, the GOP, like the Democrats, is basically entirely run by corrupt career politicians who simply do not have the interests of the American people at heart. So, frankly, I see this as a welcome development. What's your take on the situation?
Yeah, I think as far as, you know, at this point, I mean, I still follow politics because I'm a political junkie since I was a kid. I just, you know, as a very liberal Democrat who eventually became an independent. And generally, I look more favorably upon Republicans just because I think they're not completely crazy and insane like most of the woke Democrats are. But and certainly the 3 people you mentioned, Gaetz and Boebert, who were one of the few incumbents that almost lost, you know, she barely won. I thought they were going to get rid of her. And Chip Roy, who's, you know, every time I hear the guy sounds very impressive. So those are maybe 3 of the best ones of the putrid, you know, representatives we have in the House. So McCarthy is I don't know that he's at the level of Mitch McConnell. But he is certainly, I don't know if you know about his curious, I mean, I wonder about anybody that's, I don't know how old McCarthy is. He must be 50-ish, I guess. He has a very curious living arrangement where he lives in a D.C. townhouse, I think, with this guy, Frank Luntz, who's a longtime kind of a, you know, establishment rhino type pollster. I don't know. I just wonder about anybody like that, especially if he's supposed to be the leader of a party that still is trying to talk. They don't really say family values anymore, but they're trying to argue against, to stop the tide of this woke madness. I don't think he's a very good leader for that. Plus, he's a tremendous cheerleader for the Ukraine nonsense.
I was just going to mention really briefly. Yeah, that's a good point you brought up about him living with Frank Luntz, who is a very a very suspicious character, to say the least. I think the guy may be homosexual. That's been rumored. He's a Jewish individual. He's very much involved in sort of just manipulating public opinion and perpetuating the facade of this, you know, two-party system, which is a total joke at this point. They're all basically on the same page on the major key issues. But I was going to mention real briefly, Kevin McCarthy is a total career political puppet. I mean, I think his only job ever in life has been in politics in one way or the other. I think he first got started as like a 20-year-old staffer for a congressman back in the 80s. And then he got involved in the Young Republicans and ultimately became a representative. So, his entire career is grifting in the political scene. And McCarthy has been described as one of the worst D.C. insider political puppets, right, who just simply knows how to play the game in the nation's capital. Former Iowa Rep Steve King, who McCarthy unseated for making those very sensible and logical comments about Western civilization being, you know, created by white people, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, this was just ridiculous. But he basically had this huge campaign against Steve King, got him kicked out of Congress, essentially. But Steve King has launched some major critiques against McCarthy, which I find very powerful and probably accurate. And I just tend to view him as basically like the embodiment of this political swamp that is Washington, D.C. He pretended he was a Trump supporter while basically undermining his entire Make America Great Again agenda the entire time. So he's basically just a phony, corrupt political puppet of the elite running this country. Incredibly, and of course this won't surprise you, and other listeners, perhaps, you know, considering former President Trump's lack of political insight and courage, Trump actually backed this guy for House Speaker.
Which is
pretty incredible to think about. Yeah. But I just wanted to pick up on the point that McCarthy is like the embodiment of like the D.C. swamp. Maybe he's not as bad as Mitch McConnell, but he's maybe a rung below Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're both pretty bad.
No, he's very, very, very indistinguishable from all the Republican leaders. And for, going back even to Newt Gingrich, actually, when he was House Speaker, looks pretty good in comparison to what these guys were. And not that he was good, but I think he was not quite as bad as these since we've had them. Paul Ryan was awful. John Boehner was awful. These are just – they're not representative of the so-called MAGA win of the party. And, of course, neither is Donald Trump. And I'm glad you brought that up because Trump, you know, basically insinuated anybody, you got to vote. What is the Republican Party doing? What are they doing? Well, Matt Gaetz and Boebert, I don't know if any of these guys are legitimate. But if they are, it's that handful of people that are trying to – basically they're trying to say, hey, look, we need a leader. Because I said at the time, you know, when they were making these absurd predictions of a red sweep, and I said, first of all, nothing came out of the 2020 vote fraud. They want to throw you in prison if you mentioned it. So there have been no reforms made. In fact, they've made it even easier for fraud because of this mail-in ballot stuff that aren't being checked or verified anymore. So you're absurd if you think you're going to win the Senate and everything. We saw the exact same things playing out, and you saw even fewer Republicans protest again. McCarthy, by the way, Trump is repaying his disloyalty because McCarthy was one of many Republican people who party like his golfing buddy Lindsey Graham, who instantly poo-pooed any notion of election fraud. So McCarthy never bought into that, which is, you know, Trump's supposed really passionate issue. So this is all, I think, smoke and mirrors. I don't know about Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert, Chip Roy. They all sound – and Marjorie Taylor Greene, of course, is supporting McCarthy.
Right. But, yeah. She was supposed to be the renegade, you know, GOP rep, and now she's supporting McCarthy. Yeah, she seems to have had a major change of heart, so to speak, to say the least.
I think the rationale there, and she may be right, is that, the Republicans, unlike the Democrats, who are just – they're not, you know, a long, long time ago, even really before my time, the Democratic Party, who tended to be more of a, well, both parties were kind of, but the Democratic Party, you had all the so-called blue dog Democrats, which don't exist anymore. Those are the old Southern type, the Russell Long types of Democrats that really did not go along with the liberal wing of the party, the East Coast type wing. And you had a lot of Republicans that were Rockefeller Republicans, they used to call them. And now I guess that's what rhinos would be. So there's a unanimity now in the Democratic Party. They're all to varying degrees absolutely crazy. I mean, they've all bought into, I mean, they all think there's 57 genders. None of them believe in free speech. They all support Ukraine. I mean, there's I don't think there's any of this. I mean, what's it, Joe Manchin? Do you call that guy a dissenter? I don't think so. So when they wanted to, and of course that's the Senate, but it's the same thing in the House. When they wanted to have a speaker, there was no problem. They lined up them, and whoever the senior people said, yeah, we'll go for that. There's no contest there. The Republicans, however, are a completely fractured party because, despite the fact whether it's through vote fraud or just incredible voter stupidity and probably a combination of both, you saw in this last election that most of the, as the media calls them, election deniers, most of those who called out the vote fraud, a lot of them went down to defeat. So you have fewer and fewer of the Matt Gaetz types, and Lauren Boebert barely, like I said, she barely squeaked by, Chip Roy types. Instead, you have more and more of these really unknown Republicans that are largely where McCarthy's getting all his support from. These are rhinos to varying degrees. They're not any different than Democrats. They're just not quite as insane, as overtly as insane. They don't push the woke stuff quite as strongly as the Democrats do.
But you know what? They'll ultimately go along with it and right. cave in every single time. I mean, what was like the first piece of legislation once the Republicans took back the House was to like legalize gay marriage. I mean, like they always end up going along with whatever the woke leftists, the radicals are pushing. They just do it a little bit slower. They sort of tweak it a little bit. It's not as in your face. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's the same exact agenda that's being advanced.
No, but I think that's why that Matt Gaetz and people, to whatever degree, again, these guys are legitimate. They appear to be committed to the kind of stuff that it goes back before Trump, but Trump's MAGA, now it's all called MAGA. So it's the MAGA agenda, the agenda.
Well, and it's even, I don't even know if it's necessarily MAGA. It's more just kind of typical old school Republican talking points, at least from what I've read. I mean, they're all concerned about like balancing the budget and lowering taxes.
Right.
And obviously a major concern of mine, and I'm sure many listeners and subscribers to American Free Press, is the out of control situation on the southern border.
Right.
So these are all very, basic common sense type things that Republicans have been talking about and sounding the alarm on for years, but they never, of course, get anything done.
Right.
And these sort of renegade Republicans are basically saying, look, if we're ever going to actually do anything, we can't have a guy like Kevin McCarthy representing our party. We're finally – so, yeah, and who knows? This could all be just more political theater, more political stunts. And it likely is. But at the end of the day, I think it's an encouraging development to see that there is this sort of disunity within the party. I mean, you see like the Democrats, as you mentioned, they all line up and fall right in order, whether it's the squad or the more career centrist Democrats like Schumer and Pelosi and all the elite Democrats. I mean, the squad went along with, electing Nancy Pelosi the last speaker.
Right.
All of them. There was no dissent. They all lined up to support Ukraine and continue to give – billions of dollars to this corrupt regime in Ukraine in their war against Russia. I mean, the whole thing is just ridiculous. But they all fall into line. So this is an interesting development. I mean, it's still ongoing as we speak. There still hasn't been a House Speaker elected yet.
No, and I think
so. We'll see.
If you're going to see any difference at all, if you're going to see, because the Republicans at this point are supposed to, they're setting themselves out as the alternative. We're the opposing party to this craziness, this woke Democratic Party madness. Okay, well, in the Senate, even if they had taken the Senate, with the awful Republican senators there, the Mitt Romney types, they would not have ousted Mitch McConnell. As long as you have Mitch McConnell in the Senate, this guy was basically out campaigning for Joe Biden. His wife is a Chinese spy. I mean, he's awful. Even if you had a Senate full of Rand Pauls, it wouldn't matter. Somebody like Rand Paul or Ron Johnson, I think his name, that almost lost in the Senate.
In Wisconsin, yeah.
Yeah, Wisconsin, yeah. Which, again, the only good ones were the only ones that almost lost, Boebert and him. But those two are the only two I know of that are pretty decent in the Senate. One of those guys would have to be your leader to make any difference. And I still wouldn't. I don't think you'd get Mitt Romney or those people to vote for anything. But you need that. And in the House, you have more non-rhino types, but still there's not very many. You have to have somebody, unless you have, I don't know anything about Steve Scalise other than that he got shot at a game. I think otherwise he's pretty mainstream conservative, so I don't think he would be that much better than McCarthy. And I don't know about this guy Donalds that just got elected. I don't think he has a track record. I would have to see somebody like Matt Gaetz or Lauren Boebert or Chip Roy or Jim Jordan that everybody's talking about.
Well, see, yeah, exactly. Well, and Jim Jordan himself actually supported McCarthy. I mean, he didn't even – you know, he voted for McCarthy, from what I understand, anyways. Yeah, at least the first couple rounds of voting, that may have changed. I haven't been following it like super, super closely. But even a guy like Jim Jordan, all of these Republicans will say all these things, they'll raise all these issues and talk all tough in these congressional hearings, and you know, they'll ask some powerful questions to Fauci or to Merrick Garland or Mayorkas or any of these other corrupt Biden officials, but they will never actually do anything. Yep. It's all literally just stage and theater. And, you know, when it push comes to shove, they will back down. Look, if we're ever going to make any change, the criminals that are responsible for our open borders, for funding Ukraine, for this COVID scamdemic, they need to be prosecuted. And nothing is ever going to change if these people just continue to be let off the hook. You know, this grandstanding and, you know, we're going to investigate Biden. We're going to investigate Fauci. It's basically the same thing, a Republican version of what the Democrats have been doing with this January 6th fiasco.
Right. I mean, at this point, I think the 2022 midterm elections should have been the last straw for everybody, because I point out many times that it almost every incumbent was reelected, as always happens. Now, you're looking at everyone pretty much. They can try to put all the lipstick they want on it, but the economy is as bad as it's ever been. America is falling in every direction. Certainly the Biden presidency, he can't run on his record. It's been a disaster, however you look at it. They can't really, you know, gloss over that. So you should have seen the vast majority of incumbents be defeated. Instead, for the first time since 1914, not a single U.S. senator incumbent was defeated. It's shame. If that is a legitimate vote to any degree, it's absolutely shameful. And it tells me that we have no hope ever to vote our way out of this. I mean, if you can't give a giant thumbs down to the performance of the last 2 years, instead, they gave a giant thumbs up.
They gave a giant thumbs up and even elected a guy like Fetterman in Pennsylvania, who was key in the whole COVID scam in that state. And is just a total buffoon. It's a joke. And I mean, I frankly have no faith in American elections or the mainstream political establishment in general.
And don't forget the dead guy. The dead guy that won, that he had died the month before. He won in a landslide. Now, okay, I believe there's obviously they rigged the votes wherever they want to, and it's clearly corrupt. But I don't think they set out that the people, the fixers of the election, decided, well, let's rig an election for a dead guy. I think that's on the voters. They're that stupid that they voted a dead guy. And so what do you do with an electorate like that? And that's why the more I look around, I realize what a joke democracy is, because, you know, the one man, one vote, you know, these, you're looking at these people and see people that drive around their cars with masks on by themselves.
Mothers, still.
Yeah, mothers that are taking their 3-year-olds to drag strip shows. They all have the same vote we do. Who do you think they're voting for? I don't know what the answer is, but this will be like kind of a last gasp to see if there's even enough in the so-called Republican Party, if they can nominate a speaker who will maybe allow their own version of the January. I mean, I would love just to see January 6th hearings where they could have some of the people I've had on my show, the Victoria Whites and the mother Ashley Babbitt and people like that, on there to tell the real truth about what happens. And to, but I don't know, millions of Americans don't care if they're okay with sending it with keeping people in prison for, you know, 2 years now, without denied all due process and, without just denying them all their constitutional rights. And apparently they are, but at least we could maybe accent that. But at some point, John, we're talking about, we've got 75, 80 million people, at least in the country, that are, I'm just using the alleged Trump vote, that are awake to some degree, awake to the corruption. And it's you can't keep this facade up, because the Republicans are pretending to be the alternative or pretending to be their champions. And especially now with Trump apparently going out of the picture. I mean, he just appears to be saying one dumb thing after another. Maybe that, you know, his what I call the Trumpenstein project is over, and he's going to exit stage left, it looks like. But he's not the answer anymore. He's lost too much of his support. But those people are getting impatient. They don't want to be part of the system, so they won't let us have secession. We learned that in 1860. So I don't know what you can do, but we can't. At some point, this country is divided. You know, Lincoln talked about a house divided. This is something completely different. When you have millions of Americans that believe that men can give birth, and that it's okay to have men shaking their asses in the face of toddlers, and you're supposed to clap and celebrate. And that's just one, and not to mention critical race theory, when white parents are sending their little kids to school and, kids that don't even realize what race is yet, and they're making them feel guilty about something as kindergartners. I mean, how can we live with those people? So at some point on the cultural divide alone, it's going to break. I don't know how, but it has to.
Right. Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, at this point, I'm firmly convinced that the entire system just needs to continue to lose legitimacy. It's lost all legitimacy with me years ago. I mean, frankly, I've never had any sort of faith in the mainstream two-party system, in our elections, in the mass media, and in pretty much any other aspect of society. So that legitimacy needs to continue to erode. And I mean, at this point, I think what needs to happen is there needs to be some sort of like mass grassroots movement of people who are serious, who care about the country, who care about common sense principles, whether it's the tranny issue or any of these other cultural issues. We need some good, decent, God-fearing people to come together and to basically build a broad movement that could eventually serve as an alternative to the system that we see on our televisions, which is just totally corrupt and made just to perpetuate this corrupt system. So I hopefully that's the direction. I think that is actually the direction that the country is going in. It's going to take some time. I mean, I think Trump played a key role in discrediting the media, and we see the way the political system continues to be undermined with these fake elections and just outright fraud on a massive in-your-face scale. But people, the vast majority of like the 75 million Trump people you alluded to, how they know something is very wrong with the country, they're still not there yet. There's still a lot of people that have not reached that threshold and realized that the entire system from top to bottom is totally corrupt. There may be some genuine people still in Congress, like a Chip Roy or a Matt Gaetz or a Lauren Boebert, and I could be wrong about that. Maybe they're not, but those sorts of people are just swimming an uphill battle. I mean, there's no fixing the system. It needs to, totally collapse and lose all legitimacy. And frankly, I think we need to start over. And that includes that basic analysis, in my view, includes the healthcare system, which is a topic that, we've discussed at length in previous podcasts. You actually wrote a very interesting article. And by the way, we're going to kind of jump around in the newspaper. Sure. I want to kind of wrap up and talk about the January 6th situation. But this article that you wrote is actually on page 18 of this current issue that's going to press right now. And you talk about U.S. life expectancy dropping rapidly, which is a very, obviously concerning topic and very controversial topic, especially considering the raging debate taking place about the COVID vaccines and their impact on people's health and well-being. So can you kind of just give us a quick overview of this topic, this article that you wrote?
Well, yeah, and I worked in the medical, what I call for the medical industrial complex for my entire adult life, 44 years from the time I was in high school. I worked most of the time in IT, but there were some early years where I saw the sausage being made directly. I had to work on patient floors, and I saw some amazing stuff that maybe I'll write a book about that someday. But and that was then. Things were a lot better then. By the time I left the largest healthcare organization on the East Coast, involuntarily, they fired me for helping out a handicapped coworker. That's life in a right-to-work state for those of you people out there that love the life to work. It just means that right to work is right to fire you for any reason, which is what they did. I was just helping out a handicapped coworker.
For any reason or for no reason at all. Yes, they don't even have to give you a reason. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, that's the rights answer usually is not any answer at all. And so I saw so many things that were incredible, but by the time I actually worked at a hospital itself, it already started changing where it was taking on the third world appearance that we see everywhere else. They were clearly importing lots of people from Africa and Haiti and places like that as far as nurses and even doctors. So that when I would walk around, it didn't look like the same place. And that's become even more so. And that's not the total reason. The system is horrible and corrupt and bloated, but that doesn't add to it because there's sometimes communication problems that develop. I mean, it's not like the old white doctors were great either, you know, but the system, Western medicine, leaves a lot to be desired. And, you know, really, Richard Nixon, one of the things he isn't criticized for was, I think, the worst thing he did, and that was to pave the way for HMOs in the early 70s and also open the door to the insurance companies and big pharma. And that's where we are now. You watch any commercial, especially Fox News, which is, you know, the one network. I watch Tucker Carlson, so I'm familiar with their commercials. But every commercial almost is big pharma. Ask your doctor. Tell your doctors. Then they list a million side effects. And this is a hideous system. It's a system that depends on people being sick. If everyone's healthy, they go out of business. So we're seeing now that this entire COVID narrative is being brought to you by the system. My book on the COVID narrative is almost done now. It's called Masking the Truth. I'll be sending it to the publisher soon. And it has an entire story from beginning to end. And there's really not an end. It's really no way to end it because it continues to be ongoing. But even if we took the COVID thing at face value, this is just a horrible virus. Nothing we can do about it. It's random. It came along and, you know, we're doing everything we can. Well, if that's all you can do, if people are dying nonstop, getting the COVID after getting the vaccine, that means the vaccine isn't working. At least you don't even talk about it being a bioweapon that's killing people, but it's at least not working. And you're not eradicating this any more than you've eradicated cancer. Childhood cancer rates are skyrocketing. What sense does that make with the trillions that have been given to cancer research over the years? And it's not surprising that life expectancy is dropping, but that shouldn't happen in the self-proclaimed greatest healthcare system in the world. I mean, they're talking all the time about the cutting edge research. We certainly have the money. So what are they doing with it? Well, anybody who's experienced it knows how bloated and expensive and non-responsive and, corrupt it is. And we're seeing it firsthand. COVID is really shining a light on it, but I know it's hard for older people especially, but stay away from it to any degree you can, because I think you're much better off. You know, before COVID came, it was acknowledged that hospitals, doctors, and healthcare in general were the third leading cause of death in America. I think because they've swept under so many people like my brother that died in hospitals because of their protocol. They were killed by the medical establishment. I think because of all these, they're not even adding this into, I think they're probably, that our healthcare system is probably the number one killer in America now. And that's a damning indictment.
Yeah, and that's another aspect of your article that you wrote about, sort of to kind of wrap it up. But I just wanted to mention something briefly. I mean, my basic take is that the quote-unquote U.S. healthcare system, that's not even a – talk about like an Orwellian word. It's not even about your health, but the healthcare system, the way it's described – I mean, at this point, it probably has been this way for a long time. It's simply about making money and selling pharmaceutical products. That's it. It's not about improving an average person's health or even necessarily helping them recover from illness or disease. First and foremost, the entire system, and you describe it accurately, I think, as the medical industrial complex, this system is concerned with money and profits. And that should be so clear to anybody paying attention at this point. Let me just read briefly. I wanted to read one paragraph from your piece here. You say here, not only is the money not the money, you know, that is invested in this medical industrial complex, you say not only is the money not spent logically, the medical industrial complex is rife with incompetence and corruption like everything else in America 2.0. Even before the shocking increase in excess mortality in this country, the medical profession itself was the third leading cause of death in America. Considering all the unknown numbers of people who died in hospitals due to the monstrous COVID protocol, including this writer's brother, our horrific healthcare system itself may now very well be the leading cause of death overall. And I know you basically just made all those points, but I think you wrote it very, very eloquently and concisely there in that paragraph.
Thank you.
So yeah, I mean, I obviously completely agree with your analysis, and that leads me to the next topic is this. And this is something, frankly, most people just simply do not know about, and that is the reality of misdiagnosis in American healthcare, in the American mm-hmm. healthcare system, and how doctors are one of the major causes of death in the U.S. each year. And we talked about this in a previous podcast, how, for instance, I mean, you could go look at the numbers. How often is, you know, somebody supposed to have an operation done on their left shoulder and the doctor does it on their right shoulder. Yeah. Like stuff like that, like ridiculous, like situations like that are actually way more common than most people would think. And that might not kill you, but, you know, certain surgeries, it certainly will kill you. So anyways, it's just a reflection of just how totally corrupt the whole system is. And I, as you recommended, I recommend everybody stay away from this system to the greatest degree possible. I frankly want nothing to do with any doctor, with any insurance company. I haven't had health insurance for years now. I mean, I just don't trust these people. They don't have our best interests at heart, despite what they say and despite what they may even genuinely think.
Yeah, they don't. And you made up a point about surgery. That's why if you go for, I don't know when they made this so-called reform, but again, I knew when I was a young guy working in the hospital, I heard stories as soon as I was worried. It shocked me about, you know, the nurses would, you know, I knew nurses, I was engaged to one at one time, but they would talk about, you know, doctors routinely leaving scalpels in patients after surgery. And the reason why they now, if you go into surgery, they will, let's say you have to have something done on your left arm. They will make sure they, with a magic marker, they circle that because, and it's because of so many unbelievably careless and reckless doctors, cut off the wrong arm and things like that for over the decades. And that's why doctors, they complain about the insurance rates and everything, malpractice, but they are because they made so many ridiculous, errors like that. And just you don't expect these tremendous professionals, these heroes, that they continue to get lauded. And the people, you know, I write on Substack. My Substack is out there. It's called I Protest Like My Show. And I just wrote an article about the Damar Hamlin guy and just kind of shining light on that because this is kind of tied into that and how you just get glowing tributes over and over again to the first responders and how great everybody is and how courageous they are. Yeah, it's John, I'm just sick of hearing how courageous the Postal Service employees are and the doctors and nurses and the first responders. I mean, to me, you know who's heroic? Heroic is a guy that, you know, a middle-aged person that has to work a dead-end, physically laborious job and has to get up at 6 in the morning and will be chewed out by the boss if they're 5 minutes late. Those people are heroes to me and get paid a pittance for it. And I'm sick of hearing these people because I know, having worked with them and seen them up front and up close and personal, the last thing they are heroes. And, you know, that certainly goes for the post office. I mean, visit your local post office and see if you see any heroic behavior there.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. The situation. And you're referring to the safety for the Buffalo Bills.
Yes.
Who, after, you know, he tackled the running back, the hit was a little bit. It looked like he did actually get hit sort of like right in his chest, but he got up and immediately fell backwards and just totally fainted. Apparently, you know, his heart stopped. He had to have CPR conducted on him. It was a whole big scene. And you're right. You know, the response has been, to praise the first responders. And what is even more sickening are all these white football fans that are out there holding vigils. Now, don't get me wrong. What happened to this guy is very tragic. I don't mean to minimize it or even – I'm not even trying to criticize the player or the response of the EMTs or anything like that. It's just, where are your priorities when you are out there holding vigils for some pro athlete that probably cares less about any of these people, is making millions of dollars to go run around a football field, when, for example, just the other day, I think it was in fact on New Year's Day, a young white woman in Ohio was working at a Dollar Tree. Talk about a dead-end job.
Yeah, I heard of it. Yeah.
And a black guy comes in with a machete and murders her in cold blood. Yeah. Where are the vigils for these sorts of people?
Exactly.
I mean, like, the country is just so absurd and ridiculous with this football worship and the sports ball worship and just where our priorities are in general. It's just, I mean, it's like we've collectively lost our minds. And the media, of course, plays a key role. But the fact that people go along with this and continue to participate in this charade is just frankly disgusting in my mind.
No, it is. And the only good thing that might come out of this is maybe, as you're seeing in the NBA with Kyrie Irving and some of these outspoken black players, because there is no such thing as an outspoken white player. I mean, Aaron Rodgers comes closest when he talked about the vax, but it's going to have to be somebody like a Kanye West that's going to be a wild card and is going to have to be at least listened to because they're black. So I'm hoping that enough black players start realizing, hey, you know, because the same day that Damar Hamlin collapsed on the field, This guy, Uwe Nwankwo, or say you've been a lineman in the league for years, and Uche Nwankwo or something, but kind of a nondescript lineman. But he was retired, 38 years old. He died suddenly, and he had left a long litany of, you know, attacks on anti-vaxxers and how stupid they were and everything. So that one got glossed over. No vigils for him. But, you know, this is – I think this is – at some point – a lot of the black players, because they're predisposed a lot of times to this kind of, you know, conspiratorial thinking. I know, you know, I worked with, because I am too. But so I'm hopeful that maybe a Kyrie Irving in the NFL starts questioning, hey, wait a minute, especially because it's not going to be, it's not going to happen just one time. Hundreds, if not thousands, depending on the source, of soccer players all over Europe have dropped. Not all of them died, but a lot of them have. And so it's going to happen again. It's amazing it took this long to happen. But the more it happens, they can come up with this obscure cardiac condition, comorbidity, whatever. No, nobody ever heard of it before. And they can't just keep attributing it to that. It's something. So it'll be interesting to see. But I hope that maybe they will open the awareness on it, because the more attention that's drawn to it, you know, maybe we can wake some more people up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's been the whole COVID vaccine debate has been raging for a very long time. And there's a lot of people that are very skeptical. There's a lot of pretty fantastical and really unsupported claims, although they could be true, about the vaccine actually killing, you know, millions of people around the world. I don't know if we have the concrete evidence to prove that.
Right.
But one thing is absolutely certain, is that the vaccine itself is extremely dangerous. And there are all sorts of people who are having very, very negative side effects from taking it, or even outright dying in certain cases that have been documented. But but you're right. I mean, so basically, I mean, I don't know if you – do you follow the UNS review by chance?
No.
Ron UNS wrote an article the other day where he was basically arguing that a lot of the deaths are actually from COVID itself rather than from the vaccine. It's basically like a 3,300-word article that makes some decent points and basically points out that a lot of the quote-unquote vaccine deaths – haven't really been well documented, and they're sort of alleged or suspected, which is probably true. But at the end of the day, the broader point is that nobody should be taking this vaccine. It's extremely dangerous.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work exactly. Go ahead.
There's got to be some. They tell you, the insurance industry focused on the fact that in 2021 the death rate from 18 to 64 went up 40%. And
right.
You know, the insurance industry will tell you 1 to 2% maybe is normal. Anything beyond that, 5%, 10% would be, you know, unprecedented, beyond belief. It would be something that would shake the industry. 40%, and I believe that 2022, the death rate will probably be even higher. So there has to be some explanation. I've had people like Scott McCullough, you know, renegade doctors, on my show. And as he said when he was on iProtest, he said, look, there's only one thing that's been introduced into the equation that's different.
Right.
And that's
the vaccine. Absolutely.
I mean, because you know, even by their fanciful numbers, the numbers while they incredibly magnified and exaggerated the deaths of COVID by, you know, claiming people that were shot and things like that. And it's all documented. It'll be in my book. At the same time, they've minimized the deaths supposedly, or ignored the deaths that might have come from the vaccine. But even if you take those numbers at face value and say the official numbers of COVID are right, they don't come close. They're a fraction of deaths that would be, you know, 40%. So there has to be something else out there that's doing it. So people at some point, it's going to be, because you're right. I know the people that say the million, you know, everybody's going to die that got vaccinated. I hear that all the time. But if really millions and millions, if substantial, you know, half the population or so, at some point it's going to be impossible to hide, because you're going to look around and say, where is everybody?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of speculation about it. And, you know, it's interesting to entertain and to maybe read about or listen to some of these, you know, sort of whistleblower type doctors make these sorts of speculations. But really, to me, the main issue is that people are absolutely being maimed by this vaccine. And I've been following a website that I've mentioned many times on previous podcasts. It's called realnotrare.com. And I mean, almost every day they have a new story up, and it's basically just a brief written Q&A with an individual who took the vaccine and had a very negative side effect. And they range, you know, the side effects range from heart problems to, I mean, you name it. You know, all sorts of very, very bizarre things are happening to people. So something is very wrong with this whole vaccine system. Something is very, very wrong with our healthcare system in general. And, you know, another topic I wanted to get to is, I mean, think about how much money is pumped into this system. Think about how much money is pumped into fraudulent concepts like cancer research, like the phony walks and marathons that they hold, the public relations stunts. I mean, you see all this like feel-good propaganda that we see all throughout society. I mean, think about like the NFL wearing like the pink shoes for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I mean, is this system at all concerned with figuring out what really causes cancer or even developing a protocol for curing the disease or treating the disease? I mean, they want to get you on like radiation therapy or chemotherapy or other protocols that actually like literally kill you and like, you know, harm your body, harm your overall health to kill the cancer, to kill the cancer cells. I don't think they even understand cancer, frankly. I think cancer is probably a result of lack of, you know, nutrients and just like basically like a long process of your body just breaking down because you're not taking care of it. So, I mean, I guess my overall question is, how much more money are we going to pump into this totally corrupt system and go along with the charade that they actually are trying to help us and actually try to find the source of diseases like cancer?
Exactly. And that's, you know, you raise the point. I mean, in my book, Crimes and Cover-Ups in American Politics, 1776 to 1963, I had a whole section on the birth of vaccines and the birth of cancer, because they did a study about – it's probably been 10 years ago now, or 5 to 10 years ago, a university study, and they got it in England, where they conducted a study of like hundreds or thousands of mummies. And they were kind of looking to see what kind of traces of various diseases. Anyway, they found virtually no evidence that any of them had cancer. And if you look at from, I think, 1900, right around 1900, if you look at the leading causes of death in America, cancer, heart disease, you know, they either weren't on the list or they were so far down it was almost non-existent. So how does that possibly, how does it happen? Let's say by the 1920s, cancer was already surging. So they're about a 20-year period, and it just happened to coincide with the first onslaught of vaccines. So a lot of people, and I have a lot of their quotes in the book, a lot of these early doctors were saying, hey, they weren't going to vaccinate anybody because they were seeing a link between that and causing cancer. So I don't know if that's it or not, but something happened, and certainly the money, the trillions that had been spent on these things for the American Cancer Society. And in my book, Hidden History, I talked about the great charity boondoggle, and I talked about these things.
Yes, like, absolutely.
You look at what they pay the CEOs, and they put very little of the money that goes into research, but no one questions. And again, they just heap praise onto these miserable failures. You guys you're not curing people. You're maybe keeping them alive, but you're not keeping them alive longer because the life expectancy rate's going down now. So, you know, at some point, when do we hold them accountable? But nobody gets better press. I mean, you talk police, soldiers, anything, teachers, nobody gets better press than those men in white and the nurses. Nurses and doctors, despite being at least the third, at best, the third leading cause of death in America, they continue to be lauded. This Buffalo Bills player, the first question I would ask is, why did it take you so long to transport him to the hospital? They just waited on the fence. Supposedly they were waiting for his mother? What? Waiting for his mother to come? What sense does that make? Why did it take so long? Why did they medevac him out of there? His heart stopped. I mean, that's insane. They were very lackadaisical about it, but now all you hear is how great they were, how heroic they were. And that's what happens all the time. Even when, you know, somebody dies, well, they tried their best. They did everything they could. They fail all the time. At this point, with the alleged technology and the advances that we have in medicine, people should be living, you know, twice as long as they did. Instead, they were living less. That makes no sense. They've done nothing. It's that childhood cancer rates are exploding. They've done nothing to eradicate these diseases. It's a horribly corrupt industry, and it depends on you being sick, not being healthy.
Yes, that's a very good point. Well, I mean, the source of cancer and other, you know, other diseases that are very common these days, I think you're right. I think vaccines absolutely play a role in all this and just overall degrading our health and attacking our natural processes, our natural immune system and that sort of thing. But also think about all the toxins that are introduced in society today.
Yeah.
All the fake food, all the junk food. No, you know, people aren't getting enough water. They're not getting outside. They're not getting in the sun. I mean, so really, like, my main takeaway is that we as individuals are responsible for our own health. And this is a message that should be understood and discussed by people every single day, because at the end of the day, we are in fact responsible for our own health. Not your doctor, not your nurse, not anybody in this medical industrial complex. They are there to exploit you, to take advantage of you, to make money off of you, to keep you sick, you know, to perpetuate your illness, to make more money off of you, you know, basically. So really, my main takeaway is, look, no one should take any vaccine for any reason, straight up. There's no vaccine that is beneficial or helpful under any circumstances. You should never take a vaccine. You got to eat real organic fruits, vegetables, and meats. You got to exercise at least 4 or 5 times a week, if not daily. You got to drink plenty of water. Limit your consumption of sweets and junk food and outright fake food. I mean, if you can't just outright eliminate those sorts of foods from your diet altogether, I know it's very hard in, you know, this society that we live in today. And you got to get outside, you got to get in the sun, you got to get off the computer, and you got to get into the real world. I mean, that's it, basically. It's very simple. You know, it's a lifestyle change. And I guarantee you, you will feel much, much better. You will have more energy. You will be quicker. You know, your mind will work quicker. You know, all these sorts of things.
Oh, I certainly agree with everything you said. It's, you know, be your own doctor, as they say. I mean, that's stop trusting these people. There's no reason to trust them. They're wrong a lot of the time. And I believe that they I believe there'll probably be at some point a scandal where and you've already had the first couple doctors who admitted to giving out fake cancer diagnoses over the years. I don't believe that was an isolated example. I believe that probably that happens routinely. And, you know, they see people feel fine until they go to the doctor and then, well, they're great. I mean, and, you know, the power of suggestion is strong enough.
It's like, and the placebo effect, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
you get it suggested in your mind, and then next thing you know, you're stressing and you may bring on your own cancer. Yeah. Or whatever disease. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something. And I mean, just the like pharmaceutical products in general. I mean, I can't even remember the last time I took even a Tylenol or an aspirin. I don't think any of this stuff is good for you. I mean, you can get whatever you need from fruits and vegetables and your food and water and just getting rest and that sort of thing. You don't need to take any of these products for any. I mean, again, for any reason.
No, I don't
know. In my opinion, I mean, that could, you know, maybe there are certain exceptions to that. I don't, you know, I don't know. But if you're a normal sort of well-adjusted person, you're fairly healthy. I mean, you don't need to be taking any sort of pharmaceutical products for any reason.
No, the odds are it's not going to do any good. And so many people, I mean, I'm 66 years old. I don't take anything, but I'm in a very small amount. I think I read somewhere, I think 90% or 90 plus percent of the people my age are on at least one pharmaceutical. Big pharma med, and like 75% or something are on multiple ones. So, I mean, everybody I know, I know very few people that are near my age that are that, but I just think it's, it does more harm than good. But I know, you know, obviously it's hard to, but it's, again, it's the system. I don't trust the system, but so many people place their trust in and do it. And again, you talked about corrupt from top to bottom. That's a theme of mine over and over again, is that there's nothing about this system. There's no part of the system that can be trusted at this point. That's why I have no more argument with the anarchists anymore. I have a lot of anarchists that support me. And I used to, you know, say, oh, I can't have anarchy, but I have no argument for them anymore, because, you know, to not have anarchy, you have to have trust in some kind of authority. What authority in America 2.0 would you trust? Nobody to trust. So,
right. Well, I mean, until we can get some people that have some integrity and some honor,
right,
and some, you know, truthfulness and you know, just willingness to do the right thing and some integrity. I mean, yeah, we're going to continue to have this totally corrupt system. So, yeah, I tend to agree with you, and I guess the anarchists to a certain extent. Although, I mean, I don't think that government itself is necessarily inherently corrupt. I think it's all about the people that are running it. You know, that's what it's all about. And right now, we just have like the worst of the worst running society. Anyways, you know what? I want to move on. I want to talk about your article, very interesting article on page 7, another topic that American Free Press has been talking about and writing about for a very long time. And that is this fraudulent concept of global warming and just the extreme politicization of climate change in general, like the concept of climate change. I just want to read the first two paragraphs quick, and this is your article on page 7. No climate emergency, says think tank. And it says, you start out here, along with a strict anti-free speech agenda and a devotion to transgender madness, no woke position on the left is more universal than that the planet is in grave danger from climate change. This is, for all intents and purposes, a campaign to further destroy the middle class and force Americans to lower their standards of living. The bogus nature of climate change is most obvious by the fact that Greta Thunberg, Al Gore, and the majority of Hollywood all refuse to mention the BP oil spill, which was the greatest ecological disaster in modern history. This is because climate change is unconcerned with traditional environmentalism. Thus, no talk of air and water pollution or the incalculable damage done by the U.S. military alone and all of our bombings and occupation. The nuclear disaster at Fukushima, Japan is not mentioned either. And that's a very, very good point that you raise right off the bat. And that was a major red flag with me when I was first sort of waking up to the fraudulent nature of the whole climate change movement, or like the radical like environmental agenda, is that they are just simply not even remotely concerned with genuine environmental problems, such as mass immigration and, you know, major industrial pollution. There's no mention of the total in-your-face, just insulting hypocrisy of some of the leaders of this green energy revolution. The people that are flying on private jets all over the world, lecturing average people, telling us that we can't own a car or drive a gas-powered vehicle, or we can't even like flush the toilet, they say. I mean, these people are just ridiculous. But yeah, anyways, you raise a number of very powerful critiques about this overall movement in general right off the bat.
Well, thank you. And you know, I wrote a lot about what the new normal. Now we hear new normal for everything, but they were starting to say the new normal back when I wrote Survival of the Richest. In that book, I talked about this is the new normal, that's the new normal. One of the new normals, and the climate change, it comes out of that. And it's basically the idea is not to be, because again, if this was a legitimate movement, they should be holding BP's feet to the fire. Greta Thunberg should be sitting outside BP headquarters, chaining herself to a fence or something like my friend Cindy Sheehan did to the Bush White House back when her son was killed in one of the senseless wars. That's what real protesters do. But she doesn't probably know what BP is. She's an actress, and she comes from an acting family. She does. And she's just, you know, playing a part, much as Al Gore is a career politician. If he was concerned about energy, then he wouldn't have rung up the highest energy bill I think ever recorded in Tennessee or something when he was there. And you mentioned these celebrities that literally, Leonardo DiCaprio, whatever, they're flying in their private jet to lecture you about driving an SUV, about your carbon footprint. So they're obviously the biggest hypocrites imaginable. But it's, you know, because I used to be an environmentalist. I thought I was. I was concerned about air pollution and water pollution, things like that. And but Cindy Sheehan is actually the one who really – she wrote a piece about the climate change, and she talked about why isn't the U.S. military ever talking about all this, the havoc that we have wreaked on the environment and the climate, you know, in so many other places around the world. They never talk about that. And of course, the other side is they never mention anything about China and India, who are the two biggest polluters on the planet, supposedly. So it's not about that. It is about, they don't have to do much in China because they've already got their citizens living in cubicles. That's what they want here. That's why you have these, these minimalist living and all this nonsense of trying to make it seem cool. And, you know, these young people will buy anything. It's not cool to have a smaller living space. You used to aspire and want something bigger. We want more room. We want to expand. We want to grow. That's devolving. It makes no sense.
Have you seen the shipping containers that are being transformed into like little studio apartments now?
Like this doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, this is like what we're reduced to now. And this is all, you're right. It's totally a part of this climate change agenda, this broader agenda that really is only directed towards the Western industrialized world.
Yes.
And yeah, and it's interesting because you actually highlight a report from the Global Climate Intelligence Group, which aims to put the science back into climate science. And the report basically concluded that there is no climate emergency and that climate science itself has just been totally corrupted by this agenda-driven by these like agenda driven elites to totally transform society. That's what this is all about. Yeah.
And I talked about some of the predictions in there and some of the ridiculous predictions. David Knight does a really good job. I've been on David Knight's. I go on his show once in a while. He's a friend and does a great job. I think he's got one of the best daily shows out there. And he basically just goes over the news. And he, you know, used to be with Alex Jones years ago, left in a dispute over Trump and everything. But he loves to talk about, he'll read things from Time magazine and things like, going back to the 60s even. And there's so many of these absurd predictions that, you know, that everything will be underwater by 1973, or the poles are going to either melt or we'll all be frozen. I mean, these, they're all over the place, whether it was going to be a nuclear winter, whether it's going to be, global warming. I mean, global warming, they don't even use anymore. It's been replaced by climate change. That seems to be the new catchphrase. And it really, you know, and they needed to do that. They needed to take environment out of it, or ecology out of it, because this is not anything about our environment. The only thing is what you're in by you. That's not BP. That's not, you know, ExxonMobil. It's about you as an individual, not the celebrity in Hollywood that has the private jet, but the average person that, you know, wants to live in a neighborhood where you can have a single family home. No, we can't have that. That's, you know, that uses up too, that's too big a carbon footprint. You can't drive an SUV. You can't drive a car at all. That's why
and even the idea, and the report gets into this, you actually excerpt some of it and sort of quote and get into this topic about how like CO2 itself is not even actually really a pollutant. It's essential to all life on Earth. Yeah. So, I mean, even like the notion that CO2 is like harming the planet for whatever reason is just totally fraudulent. And also in the report, you kind of conclude the article, you say that, you quote the report, I should say. And they note that climate science has degenerated into a discussion based on beliefs, not on sound, self-critical science. And that is so true. I mean, this is all like a belief system. It's not based on any actual science, you know, genuine science or critical, you know, look at what's actually going on in the world. Yeah.
And it's all because identity, it's part of identity politics. Identity politics is all based on emotion. How does it make you feel? So climate change is a part of that, just as our judicial system now is a part of that. That's why you have politicized prosecutions. I hate Trump. I hate his administration. So we must prosecute them because I hate him. You know, it's based on emotions. It's say those January 6th people, oh, I hate them. They were so stupid to vote for Trump. So we're going to lock them up and throw away the key. It's based on emotion.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's even so bad now, you know, some of these leftists on Twitter or Facebook, you know, you say something they don't like and they want you thrown off Facebook or Twitter. Yeah. They want you arrested. I mean, they literally like want to call the cops on you. Yeah, it is. You're right. That's a very good point. Well, and speaking of that, that kind of ties into our final topic I want to wrap up this program with. And that is the ongoing January 6th saga. It sort of died down, I guess, with the conclusion of the House committee to investigate January 6th or whatever they officially termed it. And you know, you mentioned earlier that the average American people are just sick of hearing about this. Nobody cares anymore. They all recognize how, you know, politically motivated it's all been. But you and I actually both wrote about this topic in this current issue. Your piece is on page 5, you know, relating to January 6th. And you talk about like the actual deaths at the Capitol. And, it's just incredible the way this whole situation has been totally spun. Why don't you just give us a quick overview of the article that you wrote?
Yeah, well, and you still will hear people, including members of the committee, talk about the deaths. And sometimes they'd come right out and say that the the protesters were responsible for it, intimating that they killed somebody, whatever. And we know of 5 people that died that day that we know of. And none of them were killed by the protesters. In fact, all of them but one were protesters. Officer Brian Sicknick, after they lied about him for months and kept claiming he was hit in the head with a fire extinguisher.
Totally made up story.
Absolutely.
Entirely made up story, yeah.
Completely made up. And they continued to lie about it, even when they had the medical examiner's report, when they had the family testimony. No, he died of a stroke. Now, you know, maybe it was, you know, maybe, I don't know, the situation that day, the stress, you know, but, they, you know, that's, you can't blame that on the protesters. Two protesters that were – now, I had Ashley Babbitt's mom on my show a while back, and she seemed to suggest that those two protesters maybe – I don't know. I talked to Gary McBride, who I interviewed for AFP a while back. He's done some great unheralded work and has seen his own life uprooted. He lost his home, his family left him. That's what happens to whistleblowers. Very courageous guy. But he doesn't think there's any evidence that those two like were killed by cops or whatever. But you know, one of them apparently had a heart attack. But regardless how they died, they weren't killed by protesters. They died within the events. They either died of a heart attack or something, or some kind of natural thing they had wrong with them that were, you know, during the rush of the crowd or the stress. Or, you know, if we don't have any evidence that the cops did it. But we do know that a police officer shot and killed Ashley Babbitt. That's been all over the news. And they've actually they did nothing to the cop, even though he had a record of leaving a loaded weapon in the Capitol bathroom, which
they celebrated this guy. He was a hero in the media.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, he was a black cop. I don't. That probably helped him a little bit. I think it would have been the same either way, but that certainly didn't hurt him in terms of being immune from criticism. And then you have Roseanne Boylan. I'm still trying to get her sister on my show. Gary McBride knows these people, but it appears that they were at least negligent and let her die, where she was trampled to death and she was beaten. At least beaten some, and some people say, I'm still trying to find, you know, and I listed the Lila Morris as her name, and you won't find much about her online, but some people believe that she beat her to death, much as the other officer.
Now, she was the Capitol police officer, right?
Yes.
Right. And by the way, there were a lot of allegations that a lot of the cops were actually outright attacking and even provoking some of these conflicts. And I mean, I think the whole thing, I mean, my basic takeaway at this point is that the whole situation was just it may not even necessarily been like organized and like sort of like there was like one major like ringleader behind it all. I think it was just sort of a naturally chaotic situation. And the policies that were in place by the police, where in some cases they're actually letting people in the building, and in other cases they're confronting protesters and attacking them and that sort of thing. Yeah. It was just, I mean, it seems pretty clear at this point that the powers that be wanted a spectacle, wanted a chaotic event that the media could run with and characterize as a quote-unquote attempted insurrection. And that's exactly what they got on January 6th.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you accepted at face value that these people were really attempting to break into the Capitol, and it's kind of a strange insurrection because they've admitted there was not a single weapon on them. There's not a gun they could find anywhere. That's why you're not going to see any of them charged with gun charges. But so it's a strange way to, you know, to try to take over the gun without any arms. But even if you accept that, the idea that you punish, I think there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people that have been charged to some degree, is such excess. And the penalties these people receive, the guy in the crazy Viking hat, I think he got 7 years. It's just, and Victoria White, who's been on my show, she's in danger of a 30-year prison sentence. And all she did, she attempted to stop somebody from breaking a window and then was beaten to a pulp by cops. This is insane. And then you have in the last days of the committee, I don't know if you touched on that in your article, but this guy Ray Epps,
who was basically treated with kid's gloves. And that's something that I wrote about, is his testimony was finally released. Yeah. He testified almost a year ago, January 21st, 2022. And apparently he did this voluntarily with his lawyer present. I read pretty much the entire transcript. And I don't know if you read the whole thing or if you, you know, really delved too deeply into it, but I'm actually not even necessarily convinced. I never really have been convinced 100% that he was some sort of undercover operative. That has been alleged by all sorts of people all over the internet.
Right.
It's something that he vehemently denies. In this testimony, he denied repeatedly ever meeting with any sort of law enforcement official, sort of FBI official or operative or anything like that. He did actually admit to one meeting with a guy that apparently he didn't know very well from Arizona, which in my mind was a little bit suspicious, but nobody really seems to have picked up on it or reported much on it. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but in the testimony, Epps admits that this guy had been trying to call him and contact him once he was in D.C. I think he went with his son and a couple other like family relatives. And this guy was attempting to reach out to him and Epps ended up calling him back, and they met up for dinner the night before January 6th. So that's sort of weird. I don't know really what was going on with that situation or who this guy was, but that to me was something that probably should have been followed up on. But anyways, my overall take is that he was probably just like one of these MAGA type people, somebody that was concerned about the alleged results of the 2020 election, that genuinely wanted to go into the Capitol, the people's house. I mean, he was basically saying that it was his understanding that, you know, people could access the Capitol, and that is usually the case, right?
Yes.
I mean, you can usually go to the U.S. Capitol and observe Congress and things like that. He said, but this is a direct quote from his testimony. He said, "My vision was to get as many people in the U.S. Capitol as we can and surround it to be there. Let them know that we're not happy with what has happened." And that was it. He didn't want any violence, he said. And you see him on these videos, which, you know, maybe could be taken out of context, where he's encouraging people to go to the Capitol. And, you know, you see him whispering in one of the guy's ears as they're attempting, you know, right before they actually start, like, attacking the barricade surrounding the Capitol. Now, Ray Epps says that the entire time he was there, he was attempting to de-escalate the situation, to prevent violence, to prevent people from attacking law enforcement officers, and to direct their attention on the Congress and on the Capitol, where the real, you know, criminals are that stole the election. And maybe that's right. Maybe that is all he was attempting to do. But at the end of the day, it seems pretty clear, based on not only his own testimony but also the video footage that we have, that he at least partially helped instigate the crowd to create this scene of chaos and insurrection, quote unquote insurrection, that the mass media and political establishment ran with to, you know, of course, demonize Trump and to demonize the millions of people that supported him and the people that were concerned about the results of the election. So whether he was an outright agent, which there really is no smoking gun evidence or conclusive proof of, or if he was just sort of caught up in this confusion and was genuine and really wanted to, like many people, go actually like occupy the Capitol and say, look, we're not leaving until our concerns are addressed. That really, at the end of the day, doesn't matter. What does matter is that he was caught up in this situation, like probably thousands of other people who were genuinely concerned about what happened during the 2020 election. But the testimony is pretty interesting. The article that I wrote is kind of goes over at least the main parts, I thought. And one thing that he said, I don't know if you caught this, that was very interesting to me, is he was talking about how the night before, there was a lot of video footage of Epps the night before on January 5th.
Yes.
Where he was, you know, telling the crowd that we're going to go to the Capitol tomorrow, and, you know, I can't say what I really think on camera because I'll be arrested. So he made some really kind of weird statements, again, whether or not he was an actual provocateur or if he was just, you know, caught up in the moment or whatever, or said some dumb things. It really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, what matters is what actually happened. And one thing that was interesting, though, is that he says that right before President Trump began speaking at the Ellipse, a whole group of people started running towards the Capitol, and he saw this, and he wanted to be involved. He wanted to be at the front of the crowd, he told the January 6th committee. And all these other people basically leave before Trump is even done speaking at the Ellipse. And he said that he noticed on the way to the Capitol that a lot of the same people that were there the night before instigating the crowd to attack the police officers and things like that, they were the same people involved in this rush, this initial rush to the Capitol. So that is very, very interesting to me. And that dovetails with what a lot of other people have said. And again, think about it. If you have a huge crowd like this, you really only need a handful of people to really instigate something and to really get something going. And again, maybe Epps was just caught up in this. Maybe he was part of it. Maybe there were other people there that were, you know, specifically trying to get the crowd riled up. I mean, there have been all sorts of even mainstream reports about how many undercover informants and operatives were in the crowd that day. So anyways, basically his testimony just, you know, further lends further, you know, evidence to this idea that the whole thing was orchestrated and set up to be this media event.
Well, I think, you know, what interests me about Ray Epps is the response to him. That, you know, this is, regardless of whether he was an FBI informant or not, the reason why people think he was some kind of government asset is because of the way he's been treated. Not only you could maybe argue, okay, well, maybe somehow the authorities missed him, even though it's hard to see why, because I don't know that there's anybody else that they've recorded on tape saying, we got to go inside the Capitol and the crowds chanting Fed, Fed, Fed. I don't know if they had that kind of evidence on anyone else. But
right.
Maybe they do, but we still have 14,000 hours of videotapes, supposedly, that are being withheld for some reason. But the New York Times did a glowing, sympathetic piece on this guy Epps last year. And again, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the January 6th Commission treated him with kid gloves as some kind of hero. They treated him as a victim of conspiracy theorists. And this is really an odd thing to do, because he's saying, I wanted to be at the front of the line. He's admitting all this. So even if he's not a government asset, why is he getting off scot-free? You claimed all these other people are dangerous. Why wasn't he dangerous when he's on videotape doing so? Why is the New York Times the only insert? It's like Alexander Hamilton, the only founding father they liked for some reason. It had nothing to do with the fact the banks loved him, right? But the big banks, why is Ray Epps the only so-called insurrectionist that gets great? I mean, maybe he'll be a new commentator on CNN. I don't know. Would surprise me. But
no, you're so right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so he should. If this is, if they really believe, it's kind of like the climate change thing. If they're really serious about this, why aren't they talking to BP? Well, to a much lesser extent, but still in the same vein. If they really want to find out who was behind this, the Proud Boys and all that, well, you got this guy, regardless of his connections, who's gung-ho on tape and let's go inside the thing. Whether he's a true believer or a government asset, how is he getting off scot-free when people like Victoria White could face 30 years in prison? You had the father and son team, I think, were reported by their family members. In other cases, that just awful examples of how dysfunctional American families are. We have family members reporting their parents and kids and siblings and turning them into the authorities, like out of 1984. And these people are all getting years in prison. How the hell is Ray Epps being portrayed as a hero?
Exactly.
Don't understand it.
Yeah, the treatment that he's received is definitely not at all in line with the way some of these other people have been treated. And a lot of these other people didn't even really do anything.
No.
I mean, they certainly didn't commit any, egregious crimes. And I should say that Ray Epps apparently did not enter the Capitol, which may partially explain that. But you're right. Like, the treatment that he's received compared to any of these other people is just does not line up at all. It's very, very suspicious. A lot of the things that he was saying are very, very suspicious. The role that he played is very, very, very suspicious, frankly. I guess we'll see. But to me, the big takeaway is that his testimony just offered even more evidence and proof that this entire thing was basically a setup from start to finish. And, sure. We may never ultimately know the exact details of what actually happened or who was ultimately responsible for inciting this all. One thing that he did say that was very interesting and that was picked up by InfoWars and a lot of other websites was that he sent a text message to his nephew, I think at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon when all this was first going down, that he helped orchestrate it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very, very, in his defense, he claims that at the time he sent this text message, he didn't really realize the full extent of what was going on. He didn't want anybody to violently enter the Capitol or anything like that. So, at the end of the day, who really knows? But it is very suspicious the way he was treated compared to the other people caught up in this whole January 6th clown show.
Yeah.
And, just some of the things that he was saying on camera and in his testimony and the way the January 6th committee even treated him, just reading the transcript, they're treating him as a victim, as like not some evil January 6th
exactly.
insurrectionist. They're treating him as basically either an asset or somebody that they're almost like they're showing like respect and reverence for. It's very, very strange. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think, again, I don't know anything else that would explain that other than the fact that he is a protected asset because clearly the guy is saying he's a MAGA guy and he thought that the election was stolen. Now they're not. They're canceling everybody from social media for saying that. So he's not one of these people that have had to get down on their knees and grovel and say, I made a mistake. I was brainwashed and then still getting a ridiculous draconian prison sentence. But he's not doing that. He's not saying I was brainwashed by the conspiracy theorists. He's acknowledging it. And so he hasn't learned his lessons, according to the New York Times and January 6th. So why is he still being lauded as some kind of, presumably he still feels the same way, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but he's getting fawning coverage in the New York Times and, yes, and other media outlets about how these evil conspiracy theorists are out to get him. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, it's pretty suspicious, like the entire January 6th fiasco. So anyways, I think we'll wrap up there, Don. We've covered a lot of territory. I think the first issue of American Free Press for 2023, we're definitely off to the right start. I think we got some good articles in there. I just want to encourage everybody, if they're not already, to go out and subscribe to the newspaper. It really is America's last real newspaper. It's a print publication. You can get it delivered right to your house, and the articles are more or less timeless. I mean, you could pick up any copy of American Free Press and probably learn something or hear or read something that you wouldn't, you know, see obviously on like Fox News or any of these other controlled corporate media outlets. So go out, support American Free Press, AmericanFreePress.net. Don, keep up the good work, sir, and we will stay in touch and do this again in the future.
It's always a pleasure, John. Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Take care.
Bye-bye.